Welcome to the Intercut Podcast Channel, live from the 2024 Sundance Film Festival, where we go over the latest in movies, TV, and entertainment that people can't cut away from. A little harder to do that when I'm holding the mic in my hand.
Start tackling.
I'm your co-host, Zachary Shevich, and joining me from our Utah ski chalet, ready to ski in and out of your hearts, Samantha the Jedi and Arturo Zurita.
Ooh, yeah. That was nice. I liked that. Yeah, that was good.
Right into good, you. Right?
I wasn't sure if we were going to get the gutter one ever since that happened the first day. It got
what
destroyed.
Gutter?
What gutter?
Yeah, what gutter? Let's not tell our Airbnb host. We are back in Utah. It's year six of Sundance for us. Year five of actually traveling out here. Year four of being here when there's actually movies playing here. Mm-hmm. Shout out to the Harry Potter house.
No, other way around. We've been here for 5 years. It's the sixth. Sundance never. They only did one skipped year, didn't they? Or was it two?
It's the fourth time we've been here when there's actually been screenings here as well.
Yeah, 2021 was virtual, and then 2022 on the way over, they told us. Thank you for packing your bags.
Yeah, you're
it's
right.
Virtual.
Yeah, glad you rented a house, but.
That was nice. Uh-huh. It was fun.
Election year.
Oh, geez, yeah.
Third, when the snow is fluffier more than usual with the degrees. All the MLB stats.
I feel like weather-wise, it's been kind of a nice Sunday.
It's been perfect.
It was everything you needed. You got your snow. You got your little bit of blizzards. Yeah. Sometimes it was cold. Other times?
Because you
nice
don't...
Nice and
breezy. Those high schoolers were crazy.
Dude, they were wild.
They were shorts in the snow.
Yeah, I don't want to understand how the locals do it. But you do kind of want there to be some snow while you're out here.
Yeah,
if you're
sure.
Going into the mountains. And
it hurts when you come out after like 2 hours screening in the dark, and then all of a sudden... It's like the brightest thing. Everyone says bring a coat, bring
mittens,
everything. Yeah. You need sunglasses when you get out of these screenings.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, it's been in some ways a return to form, and in other ways, we were seeing the continued evolution of the Sundance Film Festival. You know, there's been a lot of really exciting movies, and there's been some things that I think we've had frustrations with coming into this year's festival.
Sadly.
How are you feeling? We're on our last day of movies. We might still get a few... straggler screening.
We're gonna get another 20 in there,
but we're almost wrapping this up. Are you feeling positive about this year, a little bit down on this year? Amanda, why don't you start us out?
I feel like it was a really top heavy year, and even that top heavy year isn't quite comparing with last year. Like, there's stuff I saw last year that it carried right through to the end of the year in my top 10 list. I don't fully know if I've seen anything like that this year. I've had stuff that's sticking with me, stuff that I'm really excited to visit again. So just in terms of the movies, I do feel like it was a little bit top heavier. I also just don't necessarily like the way that they only opened the digital up within the last 4 days of the festival. So instead of us being able to like stagger stuff in between other stuff, we're trying to fit it all in the last 4 days while trying to fit in anything that was only available in person. Mm-hmm. So that's been weird. They changed however they do the wait list. That is probably one of the biggest complaints we've seen. It does not work the same on multiple levels, and it is just a huge nightmare.
We like to attack these screenings as pairs. We like go out to screenings together and stuff, and it just makes it that much more complicated.
Everyone's in like a different place.
Yeah,
you can't connect your accounts anymore.
Less phones out during a screening when you're trying to, because then only one person needs
only
to for
one
the
person.
Two.
And then the other thing is it doesn't show you how many people dropped out of line in front of you. So we're now ending up with, like, after the first weekend of really bad luck with waitlists, people just aren't even showing up for the waitlist when they have like 17.
And
they
that
absolutely
used to be helpful.
Would have made it in.
If a theater was like averaging 50 and you were like 70, you can keep an eye on it, and if enough people dropped, you're now in that zone.
Yeah.
So it's just differences.
Yeah, just a couple of things. Just a couple of issues there. Then it was like glitching out a bunch, so I ended up with like four numbers to the same movie. Mm-hmm. Like, that should never happen. So
We also ended up, you were talking about the digital screenings being delayed for kind of the back half of the festival. I found that after the first, you know, couple days, we were looking for things to fill our schedule. There were sometimes like gaps form because there's just nothing that you're particularly interested in or that you can even get into in certain slots.
You already have it scheduled
for a later day of the festival.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I went from trying to figure out what to do with my schedule on the 22nd and the 23rd to having more movies than I had time to even watch from the 24th through the 28th.
Yep.
So I think we all still ended up with a pretty decent count.
Yeah.
I got to 50. I don't know how, if you finalized your count or whatever.
No, not
but,
yet.
I mean, we all usually do end up, you know, a few dozen
over,
at least.
Got
I'm
over
not
50.
Like 40, I think.
I will say on your top heavy comment, It's because we mapped it out perfectly.
We did. We knew what the good stuff was going to be. That's
we knew
true.
What was going to be good.
And we
knew
tried what we were premieres.
What we were anticipating. Exactly. Premieres. We knew some stuff we were anticipating that we knew was going to be a little bit slower. We also saved all the slower stuff for the end. So it's just one of those things where it's how you approach the festival. You know, if you're watching a lot of Midnights, chances are you're going to be probably more scared than the people watching the U.S. docs.
Yeah, that's true.
But I think it was still a solid year. Sure. You don't have your talk to me's, but there were some horror hears that were pretty good. We don't have a past lives, but there's something in the U.S. competition that is going to be at my top till the end of the year. And if this is like a bad Sundance year, give me more bad Sundance years.
No, for sure.
Because this is fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't think it's been a highlight out of the years that we've been traveling as a group, but I still think it was a really solid year. Really good movies, really good premieres, good food. It was fun.
Alberto's continues to hit.
Bro, I think that last bite I had last night might have been it.
You done?
Maybe.
Too much? Just binging on it?
It's just too much Mexican food at this point because we started off with Ready Wanna and everything. That's why I needed a burger last night, just something different. It's beef, but in a different way.
Yeah. Good shout out Bangkok on Maine.
Mm.
That was a new one for us. Yeah, that one was pretty good.
Solid time.
Shout out the Tots from Napoleon's.
He got it behind you.
Somewhere there. Yeah. We still got the grease stains.
Yeah. Also, just talking again about the actual screenings themselves, we found. But the theaters, you know, we've come enough years that we've seen them change certain theaters out, extend certain theaters. This year, the Eccles, which is usually the main theater, they stopped screening midway through the festival.
Which
is a little bizarre.
Because we had a really good place right next to the Eccles.
We really did.
Didn't really work out.
There's just some differences when it comes to this year's fest, but I still think overall it was a solid festival, and hopefully a solid festival for those who were at home, because as much as we love to come, and it's a privilege, and it's awesome, and we get to see some exclusives, I think the best thing that they've done is made it virtual, because a lot of the people we've met this year got a taste of it just by going to the virtual festivals, by, you know, being able to check out a movie online, and they kind of get the gist of it coming in here. And yeah, some people may not get the chance to come. It is expensive to get here. It is a lot of energy to be going up and down all of these places in the snow, and being able to attend virtually and have some of the best movies that are going to be on this top 10 list available for y'all at home, I think is a really cool thing that one of the best festivals is still doing. Continues.
Yeah.
We hope it continues.
I hope we'll see.
You know, I think one of the things that we noticed is that they kept including the Q&As, which was a holdover from virtuals.
Good call.
Although the qualities on these Q&As is
that's how you could tell it's like a last minute addition. You know, hire us, we'll get something going here. I can guarantee you.
Yeah, I guarantee you our videos.
We're already
the Q&As
recording
are better
some of them.
Than
yeah, like my Love Lies Bleeding Q&A is absolutely better than whatever.
Come on,
they got.
You're front row.
I was front row, all the way in the back. Like, wee.
with my C20.
That's what I said. I'm like, it looks like somebody just strapped a C920 to the Raptors, put auto on everything,
and then just let it rock. Yeah.
Just let it rock.
You see it begin with a white sheet of paper?
Yeah.
So I'm divided between whether or not I feel like Sundance is putting in that additional effort, hoping to continue this online program, or if it feels like they're just sort of doing what they can.
We get the recaps this year.
Yeah, the recaps also. So yeah, I mean, it's an evolving festival. We'll see what sticks around with next year. And
I would just say the online's a really good way for them to make more income. Mm-hmm. And if like income's a thing, you can get money from people all around the country that would never come here.
And I would say publicity too.
Publicity
even if
too.
You were making, I think a lot of people are talking about this festival more, especially on that second half when you've had all that hype the first week, and then in the second week everybody else gets to you get like a new, everyone's seen it here, but you get a whole new cycle of people to
a new round
to
of
view it.
People talking
of
about
opinions and stuff
like that. Yeah, so
I thought that's been cool the last two years.
It's been cool.
Yeah, and you know, we hope to see that continue, because we really do love being able to share as many of these movies with people as possible and getting to hear back from people about what movies they loved. We want to talk a little bit about the movies we love. We are doing our top 10 films of the Sundance Film Festival. These are set in stone. You're not allowed to change your mind.
No, we're
catching Freaky Tales later. It doesn't matter. You can't say it. You can say
I've
you
already
saw
seen
it.
I've already seen it. It's
we
on
can't
my list.
Say it.
So.
We'll come in a weird anthological way like the movie if Freaky Tales does blow our minds, but it really is one of the last ones.
But yeah, I you know, we talked about how this year might have been a little more top heavy. I definitely feel that way too, in that like there's some movies that really, really hit for me. Mm-hmm. And then I think the like 6 to 10 section, I've got about 10 movies that maybe could sneak in
there. Yeah, same. I have a lot that are very much in the same position, and I don't like, I'm just kind of like freeballing it.
Fewer movies that I'm like, I have to champion this movie on the pod more, that like I'm enjoying talking about these movies.
Yeah.
So
y'all have any honorables?
I got a couple.
Do you want to do those before the one?
I feel like my honorable is going to be might on be Zach's something list. There.
Okay. Yeah, so let's do the honorables before we get to number one on each of our lists. But I guess we could start off number 10. Art, if you want to get us going.
Look, I got something that's disgusting. It's vile. And one of us almost didn't even want to leave the Airbnb to see this one. Oh, but God. We got her out the door. And hopefully it was worth it for Sasquatch Sunset. A movie that was pitched to us as nothing but poop, vomit, secretions. Yeah, like the weirdest stuff. And that there was no dialogue.
Yeah.
So that was
yeah.
one thing that we were kind of intrigued by, because it was also starring two actors that we really like in Jesse Eisenberg and
Riley Keough. Not that you'd know.
I didn't know who was who till the ending of the movie. I swear to you. I thought it was out. That guy. Then y'all told me who that guy was. I was like, really? Yeah. Okay, so then it's this guy. Really? Okay,
I
then
pegged
it's this guy.
Eisenberg by the eyes.
Hey, I'm telling y'all right now.
And Keough was the only girl.
It was the only girl. So that made it easy. But it was one point where I wasn't sure.
I know,
something
I
was hidden.
Early.
Something was tucked. It is somehow the most vulgar film and yet a family film.
Yeah.
It is so innocent yet vile. It is literally just these Sasquatch people.
Yep.
Surviving. I would argue that there is dialogue, we just don't speak.
Yeah, oh yeah, there's dialogue.
It's but just, I think you'll understand.
Well,
it
some
after
of it
a while.
You get. I know exactly.
All I know is we left the screening, right? And there were moments through it where people were walking out. Yeah. There is one defining moment.
Yeah, I mean the pissing and shitting and all the things
literally
that you're talking
pissing,
about.
Shitting,
there is
crying.
Like a particular
the crowning scene
with a lot of it. And that is the moment that had inspired the most walkouts I've seen at a Sundance.
It was like a line. Yeah. A row just got up and left. As they're leaving, it's like we were cheering their exit because the rest of the theater was cheering like crazy. We left the theater and there were boys. Sasquatching?
Whooping.
Whoop to the bus. Yeah. It was crazy.
In
it was like a concert experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some people are going to absolutely hate it. I get that.
Oh, yeah.
I appreciate the commitment. This is like Planet of the Apes level when it comes to the costumes. Sasquatch Sunset
it's also
at my number 10.
Very somber. If you actually really consider what it's dealing with and like how it's progressing, it's like very depressing.
Yes. Yeah, agreed.
No, and they just don't know enough to be depressed.
To even
exactly.
Know
yeah. They're, it's very much like an animalistic movie. It's sort of about primal urges and also just like communing with nature and existing off nature and then the interference of people with nature and stuff like that. So I think there's actually like a lot of really interesting
things going on there.
Yeah. Even if it is ultimately like kind of a funny, you know, apes make weird noises type of movie. But I really enjoyed it. I ended up having it number 8 on my list.
Damn.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's funny. And I also think like even the stuff that is putting a lot of people off, the like, this is Jesse Eisenberg and Riley Keough pissing and shitting for 2 hours. Like, I think that's really overstating it.
It's
not that much worse than your average gross out comedy.
Yeah.
Like, it's basically the bridesmaid scene, right?
Yes. But people are paying like $25-$30 after that high elevations to get here. And to them, this needs to be the biggest thing. To you and I, it's like, oh, yes, another Wednesday screening.
I can get why people are walking out and why some people really didn't like it. But, like, it's also, like, not super, super absurd. It feels like in character.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like Animal Planet without Attenborough.
Did we just know going in? Like, we knew what to embrace ourselves for it.
That's
well, now
go.
You are too. It is in our top 10, but go into it knowing what you're going to get. And I think if you like that, you're going to get a beautiful story.
There we go. So Sasquatch Sunset, Arturo has it at number 10. I put it at number 8 on my list. For my number 10, I'm going to start us off with Between the Temples.
Oh. Nice,
this
nice.
Is the new film from Nathan Silver, also co-written by him and C. Mason Wells. Notably, it's Jason Schwartzman and Carol Kane starring opposite one another in sort of a like later in life Harold and Maude type of story.
Yeah, for sure.
It's really clever and fun as this sort of later in life coming of age movie about these two broken people who, you know, kind of fix each other in a way. He plays a cantor who's recently lost a wife. She plays also a widow who is sort of discovering her Judaism later in life. And the movie's got this really fun energy because it's a little bit prickly. They're a little bit abrasive with each other. You know, it's not all like hugs and handshakes, but it's also got this real charm to it. They're very funny and kooky opposite each other. It's very sweet in the end. And I think the movie also builds in a really strong way. There's a dinner scene late in the movie where everything's sort of just finally hits and it's a showcase for the performances because it's got a whole collection of great performers in it aside from Schwartzman
for sure.
and Kane. I really responded to it. I think it's just a really kind of charming indie comedy, melon comedy or something like that. So I had a number 10. I know you got it in your honorable mentions easily. Too.
Yeah, it was creeping right up on there. Yeah, this has a really great ensemble. That dinner scene that you mentioned was top tier.
I've never had a more like Jason Schwartzman, shut up.
But that shows his rage.
I know y'all loved him
last year in Asteroid. And then here he's a completely different person.
It's so opposite. He looked and acted his best in Asteroid City. And this was like the schlubbiest they've ever made him look.
And he was great. I love that.
Pumped him full of mudslides.
Yeah, they did.
All those mudslides.
We should have got some.
Not a good pick.
Yeah. So I got Between the Temples at my number 10. Amanda, let's hear the start of your list.
I'm going to go with Freaky Tales just because I'm the only one who's seen it and I really liked it. I think it helps that a lot of the initial reviews were bad. Yeah. But I do think that is a lot of like people showing up for Pedro, not really looking at the description of what the movie is or caring about what it is. This has kind of got like this very, it's about like the Bay Area and like around like Oakland and stuff. So it just has that very, you know, people are wearing like Rancid shirts. You got Operation Ivy, like punk bands and stuff. So like I always really respond to that kind of stuff. But then it kind of has three different sections dealing with three different aspects of that culture and how they kind of intertwine in weird ways. So I really liked it. Like stylistically, I thought it was really fun. I can definitely see why some people wouldn't like it, but I thought there was a lot of really standout performances. It just kind of reminded me of something that I really, really would have loved when I was younger, like not quite an SLC punk, but like kind of in the vein in areas. I do think Pedro's section was really good. At times it almost starts feeling like a kind of like a Kill Bill style movie at one point. Like, it's fun. It's just like a really fun movie. And some people are like, it's too much of other things, but no, I thought it had good vibes. I was a fan.
Present?
What?
Is it in the present or is it like in the 90s?
It's like 90s, 80s.
Really?
I have the date and I can't remember what it is right now, but like it might be another 89. I feel like there's a lot of movies that were in 1989.
We have a lot in that decade.
I think it's definitely older, not current. Yes.
And you're not normally somebody who responds to anthologies too. So.
No, but this was like an anthology where everything comes together. So it made sense. Like all of the stories connect in some way. So like you get to one thread and you're like, okay, that's this person over here now instead. So it worked and it was nice.
Amanda gave us an anthological TED Talk series on why she doesn't like anthologies.
It's true. I did.
And it all cohesively came together at the end and I agreed with her. Thank you. So I'm excited for this one. It'll be our last showing. Yeah. Hopefully. At least in theater. You'll get in. Let me know what it is. I'll get in there by the second anthology.
There we go. All right. So number 10 on Amanda's list is Freaky Tales. Let's go back to Arturo for his number 9.
The one documentary, if I'm not mistaken, right here.
Listen, he was mistaken. Daughters would end up being the final movie that I saw from the festival, and that was after we shot this at the Airbnb. So this is post-recording art shouting out Daughters, because that's not only an incredible documentary, but it is one of the best of the fest.
There was a lot of good ones, and I'm going to mention the other ones in my honorable mentions. And one I'm hoping makes y'all's list. But for me, it was one that I was very intrigued about, dealing with rap music and in particular lyrics being used against you. As We Speak is a documentary that comes from filmmaker J.M. Harper, who has edited some really good stuff in the past. Very rap-centric in the Sundance short, Don't Go Telling Your Mama.
Yes.
He had helped edit Genius. Here, the way that he's able to put the lyrics for the artist that he's following, genius. The specific cities that he goes to understand the roots of why people rap and honestly just vent the way that they do using this art form was beautiful. I also like that he doesn't stray away from the fact that, yeah, some people are snitching on themselves in these lyrics and gets to the root of where that comes from. I think it was a fantastic documentary, some really good talking heads or really interviews that he was able to do. And I thought the style of it, having the subject who he's following, the rapper, almost Kemba, do recreations, was really interesting. And then again, the editing's still on point here. As of right now, it is my favorite documentary and makes my number 9 spot as we speak. Keep it on your radar.
Nice. Yeah, that's one that I think we were really had anticipated coming in as well. And it dives into a fascinating subject in a fascinating way. I think it's got some stylistic flair to it, too, that just gives the documentary a bit of energy.
Did History on the Drums?
Yeah.
That was whoa. It's like, okay, so they'd say the way he was able to bring up that it's way more deep-rooted than the latest rap album. It's like there's history to this and like patterns that have been throughout history. I like that as we speak, bro.
All right, so we got As We Speak, number 9 on Arturo's list. For my number 9, I don't think this is going to make Arturo's list, and it definitely didn't make Amanda's. I have In a Violent Nature. This is a really...
definitely not making
it. It's not on my list. It's not here.
This is a really interesting new horror film that was in the Midnight Section. Boy. That's coming from IFC Films and Shudder, and yes, hopefully not too long.
IFC Films. That's the special one right there.
Yeah. And it does this really interesting thing, and it's essentially like you ever go to a restaurant and they serve you like a deconstructed something, like a deconstructed PB&J, yeah, and it's like
this is your Alinea of horror.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. The Alinea, it's an Alinea approach to the Friday the 13th franchise.
Boy, was it deconstructed.
Yeah, because it really strips down the idea of this almost Jason-like killer, this like big lumbering, almost like zombified kind of slasher.
Literally Jason.
Yeah, who chases these. You know, kids in a remote area, right? But it just sort of like strips it down to its barest details. It's lots of shots from the backs of people's heads of them walking in the style of the Gus Van Sant films, like Elephant. There's no score, no soundtrack whatsoever. It's just the sounds of nature, and the soundscape is really cool. I actually meant to tell this to you before, but during the Q&A after the movie, they mentioned the sound mixers of this film. They haven't worked in movies previously. Oh, their previous work is in video games.
That makes sense.
They wanted to get people who are used to creating a sound loop of walking.
Because I was going to say, it literally felt like playing the Friday the 13th game that's like Dead by Daylight, where like somebody plays. Yeah, that's what
we were coming home.
That's what it felt like.
There's this intro scene, like you're saying, when you're walking around with him, and as he's going through, you just hear people talking on the left side, and it feels like when you're like, I don't want to talk to them yet in this video game. Let me go see what else there is to explore.
That's exactly
that is
it.
What this guy is doing in the video game.
Yeah.
Do you feel like he had super hearing?
Huh?
Do you feel like he had super hearing?
I think
he came back from the dead.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like that, we've seen that happen in other movies, and it didn't give them special powers. You know, like.
Well, there's one.
But I think the approach here from director Chris Nash is like really, really interesting. It kind of takes away a lot of the like weird bullshit in slasher movies that I don't like.
The characters were dumb for reasons that the character should be, not for the reasons that the writer would make them.
Right, right. Like they were realistically naive.
Yeah.
Not just like dumb slasher characters.
And you never minded the pacing.
No, I mean, I can see a lot of people brushing up against the pacing, but for me, it really worked. I think it gets you into the mood. It creates this very ominous vibe for it. And then, you know, eventually they start, the killings start, and then it really starts going, and it becomes extremely creative. I think we think we can agree that it has like maybe the nastiest kill that we saw, at least in this festival.
And it was all downhill from there.
I think it actually was pretty solid for the rest of it.
No, that's fair. Yeah. No, I know I'm in the minority. I can't remember. It's like one scene starts happening and it feels like it doesn't end. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. I almost walked out just because of that. And not because it was gross, not because I just didn't want to watch it happen. I was just kind of like, just do it.
Man, I thought we were all having a great time.
Do it. No, I was not.
I know Amanda was like,
I'm fucking losing it.
Fuming. I'm like in between the both of you. I am just so proud of you.
Me too.
To have seen more Midnights than anyone else in this
every
group
single
is surprising.
Movie in the Midnight section.
Every single movie and some from the other sections that were horrors. So shout out to you. I'm going to send
you. I'm a scream queen, I guess. I'm going to
send you Fantasia for next Fantastic Fest. I agree with you that some of the slow shots here were actually kind of beautiful, the way he follows them through these woods, through like all the shrubbery, and it never gets in the way. That was the one thing I was looking at. I was like, it's going to get in the way of the lens, and it never does. And I'm like, all right, this is a film.
Yeah,
like, this
is, they mapped
this is
it out.
A little bit higher than your average Shutter lore that's out there. And then you get that kill that you hyped up to me the moment you saw it opening night. And I was like, we'll see. Yeah. But he hyped it up. And this is after watching a lot of gory stuff that he's like, meh.
Yeah.
Some stuff that's going to be on this list. He was like, it was okay. And I'm like, are you serious? So he comes out almost 2 o'clock in the morning, like beaming from this, like a little boy for a horror movie. Yeah. And we sit there damn near empty.
Look,
everyone made a noise.
Yeah, everyone.
It's one of those things, like, if you're going to go for it, go for it.
Oh, yeah.
This movie goes for it.
It goes for it.
I think it could be so bad that you're like Amanda and find it so slow and boring. And to me, that ending, there's
I like the ending, oddly enough.
We're split there. But damn, is it worth the price of admission for that scene alone? And as you told me, you'll know it because, well, one, you'll know it.
Yeah, you'll know.
But you're like, it's what happens after the thumbnail.
Yeah.
So then you see it and you're like, wait, no, there's something extra in that thumbnail. Then he does something and I'm like, there's the thumbnail.
There it is.
It is that kill. I can confidently say, I don't think it's, I'm not saying the movie's like Hereditary, but the way that Hereditary was that movie that I'm like, fight with me. We're going to remember this one. We have remembered it. I don't know about the whole movie, but that kill, it's cemented. It's cemented.
I'll say one thing that I think I really did respond to is it's just they took two kind of distinct film styles and somehow married them in a way that at least to me, didn't feel like discordant, right? Like it is really like a Gus Van Sant Friday the 13th film.
Yeah, it is. So no, like for real.
Yeah. It's 100% really what it is. Yeah.
So I got it in Violent Nature at number nine on my list. I think we are going to Amanda's number nine.
I think I'm going to go with one we just finally caught this morning, another doc. I'm going to go with Black Box Diaries.
Yeah, great.
Crazy,
one.
Right?
Yeah, just really crazy. It's this really horrible story about a woman who was, assaulted sexually, just to put it as lightly as possible for YouTube, in Japan, and has so much evidence to show what happened.
Begins the doc with
Yeah,
with
begins
receipts.
The doc with the receipts. Like, we're not waiting for the, like, smoking gun. We start with the smoking gun. The smoking gun is Japanese government police headquarters not caring, basically implying that things didn't happen, getting nitpicky over 20-minute time differences when someone had been, like, totally inebriated beyond being able to do anything, blackout, just insane. And this woman documenting her fight to prove what happened, and, like, the many emotions that come around with that, that even if you do win in the end, what you get, you still have all these people that now can publicly judge you because you've made this such a public thing that it never actually changes what happened to you. So what does a win ultimately actually end up being? So it's just this very harrowing tale of her kind of documenting it. She wrote a book that I'm excited to check out as well. So definitely a very, very strong doc for the festival that deals with a lot just in terms of how, like, women deal with issues, and then just how, like, Japanese culture addresses this kind of concept, especially when it's linked to higher-ups.
Yeah, we watched it this morning together. Mm-hmm. It probably should be on my top 10. Maybe I'll just make it in one of my honorable mentions. I just forgot to add it at the end.
Yeah, but you have so many of these that are, because she's also the director.
She's also the director.
She's compiling all of it together. There are many ones where, like, people will set up a doc and they'll be like, all right, intimate moment with my father. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I feel like your dad wouldn't, like, react to that. But following her in here, she's got the camera set because she is her own filmmaker, and it feels more authentic because there's not, like, a person there recording her all the time. It's her documenting herself, and there are moments in here where that one call she makes towards the end, it's like you're going through the ride, through this journey, through the turmoil of, like you're saying, proving what is already true to people
and
who, like,
so
you said,
obvious.
Don't care.
Yeah.
And does it even matter when you win, when people have already made up their minds?
Yeah. Journey is an apt way of describing it, too, because you really do go through a long time with her. The incident happened when she was 25, and I think she's 33 by the time the documentary ends. It's not just a journey with her, but a journey through the people that she's interacting with, right? Like, there's this one investigator who she's speaking with throughout the film. And at first, he's this, like, huge obstacle. And then you see, as time goes on, how he sort of starts to realize what side he should be on, who he should pursue. Yeah. And it's really interesting just to see that her perseverance being able to, like, you know, maybe not, like, collapse the system, but break it down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for a film that is about such upsetting things and is about, you know, a thing that can't be erased, that was awful, like, it still does have her victorious. Mm-hmm. You know, and
yeah,
it's,
absolutely.
It's her able to, her perseverance really, like, causing a movement in ways too. So I think there's a lot of triumph to take away from the film, even as there is still a lot of pain to be taken away from film too.
Yeah.
But it is a very stunning documentary. And one of the best we saw here at Sundance.
It's also very lighthearted. That was one thing I know the editor
was saying.
It was like, you're really surprised you're cutting this stuff up, and it's like, it's a testament to her as a person. They didn't want to cut it out to keep it more serious. They're like, that's who she is. Right. And it's like that should be the approach, and that should be the example people are seeing from her. So.
Yeah, that a victim is not just their pain, that a victim is still a full person who can have moments of joy and then also have moments of panic.
Through and through. What a crazy, to become a journalist and be like, I may not be a director for sure, but I'm going to direct the movie that's covering my case.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's raw right there. Yeah. Black Box Diaries. Great pick.
Yeah, so Amanda's number nine. Let's go back to Arturo for his number eight.
All right, my number eight is a movie we were highly anticipating from the premiere section that stars a dethroned queen. I'm sorry to say. Look, she wasn't in it for too long, but Aubrey Plaza is still very special in our hearts. She just, you know, had a little bit of a hiatus this year, not being in so many films. But nonetheless, she still showed up for My Old Ass, which is a movie where a young girl decides to try shrooms with her friends before she moves on to college and have her whole world completely change. So she gets a visit on this trip from her old ass, the older version of herself, who gives her a little bit of advice, some warnings, and just a lot of confusion, really, for what's already a confusing transition in this girl's life. We thought the cast was fantastic. The lead in Maisie Stella.
Yes.
Who you had a story about how she got picked up, but this girl was funny. Yeah.
So funny.
And then that funny leads to some really emotional scenes because of how quick she is.
Yeah.
It's a star-making performance. She's like instantly leaps off of the screen. And she's, you know, opposite, like you said, Aubrey Plaza for some of this. Right. Other people who are like experienced actors. And I believe this is her first film role. You wouldn't be able to tell because she's so natural and funny and charming, and you like empathize with her. She's really excellent in this. I think, you know, for people who still do have a connection to that, you know, really interesting time in life where you're in that transition between being a child and an adult, like there's just a lot to take away from it. I think we're all sort of in between where she was and where that Aubrey character is, a little bit older, and we're all able to look back on our past with a bit of nostalgia.
Just want to be the kid with the glasses.
Right?
Yeah.
The little brother putting up posters. Miss those days.
So I think, you know, there's a lot to connect to, and I definitely... I really, really felt this film strongly, not just as a very funny thing, but also just as something to make you appreciate certain elements of your own life more.
It's emotional.
Yeah, yeah.
Not as profound, we would say, as her last movie. Megan Park did
The Fallout
out of South By, which I think we collectively feel is the better movie. But this one was really fun, and it still has that heart to it, especially towards the end, where you use this mystical, magical, drug-filled aspect of the movie, the route that you're taking, and you get some really... really cute moments, in my opinion. So I had to put my old ass. I think it's gonna be a crowd pleaser when it comes out.
Yeah, it is. We should mention, like, more explicitly, it's a very supporting performance from Aubrey Plaza. I think
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, like she's definitely gonna be in the movie less than you're anticipating.
There's scenes that she's in that she's not really.
Yeah, but then she totally facilitates like the gut punch moment.
Yeah,
100%.
Like, the biggest gut punch moment would not hit as hard if she
was always
there.
Yeah.
Oof.
I had it in my honorable mentions. I liked it a lot.
Same, yeah.
So yeah, my old ass, that is Art's number 8. I already said my number 8, which was Sasquatch Sunset. So let's go back to Amanda for
kind of the same movie
8.
When you look at it.
I'm going to go with A Different Man here.
Let's go.
I'm going to pop that
my
in.
Number 7. Let's do it.
My number 6.
Hey, okay.
All right, we can save it then, I guess.
Thanks. So I guess it wasn't top 5 for me.
Is up there. I think this one was a really interesting look at. So it's basically stars Sebastian Stan. Mm-hmm. He was somebody who was born with a disorder that basically makes your face grow a bunch of tumors and stuff. So you end up with a facial deformity. And how he wants to be an actor and then finds out that there's a way to kind of remove all of those tumors and not have to deal with it.
He goes under like a medical procedure.
A medical procedure. And then you kind of see how like the positive ways that ends up changing his life. But then something happens where he realizes that maybe he wouldn't have had to have changed anything at all. And he could still have everything he wanted. And it's all really about the confidence you have and how much that deeply affects his life. I don't even know how to talk about this without really spoiling it.
Yeah, no, but it does a really interesting job of sort of like examining representation and sort of the roles that we even sometimes are willing to give ourselves, right? Because if you don't feel like you have the confidence or the model to go do something, you maybe don't. And I don't know, it has those like Hitchcockian vertigo elements to it that are really, really interesting. It's both like a kind of existentially... torturous film in some ways, but it's also just a very funny comedy, like a darkly surprising comedy. Sebastian Stan is really, really incredible.
It's
in
great
this.
In it.
We should shout out the makeup, which
unreal
to
because
the point
I didn't
that we
think
thought it was a
makeup.
Different character.
Yeah.
We thought it was a different person.
Actor, and I'm like, that actor really got his voice down. This is
wild.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And then we get hit with, no, it was all makeup, and I go, what?
But even there, I think the film does an interesting job of even interrogating that kind of special effects makeup, too.
All right, so let's
like,
talk
it's all
about
part
that.
Of the plot.
You and I are still split on Nathan Fielder's rehearsal.
I mean, I'm still extremely positive on Nathan Fielder's.
That's what I'm saying. We're split. This is a movie that covers all that stuff that you're saying about critiquing the makeup while doing the makeup in a movie about makeup and saying this is the solution of what it should be. And I'm like... then dealing with the actor who isn't playing the actor because you need a bigger person or else you wouldn't have gotten that money. And thus he's proving it because he's made other movies where he didn't get the money. The Q&A that he had for this was like fantastic because he's literally filling in everything that's happening in the movie and kind of telling you like, yeah, this is a response to everything that I did. Anything that you'd critique this movie for. Oh, Sebastian Stan shouldn't have played that. Yeah, y'all didn't watch the last one. Now he did. And look at how packed this place is. It's so smart in that sense. That I'm surprised it didn't make my top 5. That's how strong I think the rest of the festival is. I think this is going to be some people's favorite movie of the year. And if you're a big fan of A24, I don't get any more A24 than this.
Maybe.
You know, that's
maybe.
Actually, I hate that I understand what you're saying.
I know, right? You hate it, but it's true.
It is very neon, very Teton.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's exploring a lot of really fascinating ideas. It is a very rich film. I feel like some of its conclusions, I'm not so sure, are as Why? Interesting as its questions, but it's still like just a movie that I haven't been able to stop like.
It's going to be
considering.
Better. Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, look, I got it higher on my list than yours. I got it on my number 6.
I honestly feel like if I had seen it. That's fair. I feel like if I had seen it before something, because there's just other movies that are like fully occupying my brain still that I want to revisit. That
The other ones are just better. It's a good year. I'm telling you.
It's a good year. It is.
Also, shout out Adam Pearson. He was the one who was in Under the Skin.
Yeah.
He was also in the director's previous movie as well.
Yeah.
And the charisma this man comes in with was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Loved it.
This is one of two films featuring Renate Reinsve.
And we think it's better. This one's even better.
Yeah.
It's definitely better.
She is going full English. She was fantastic in this movie.
Yeah. Really intriguing film. I'm hoping people catch up with it. I think this is a movie that's going to not do like very well on its initial release. And then there's going to be like a bunch of people on Letterboxd who are like, this movie's actually one of the best movies. You know, like it's going to get like a bad cinema score.
And it smacks. Damn.
Yeah, but A Different Man, a great choice. One of the most interesting films we saw at the Sundance Film Festival. I think we are back to Archer for number 7, which was A Different Man. Mm-hmm. So back to me for my number 7, which is going to be Presence.
This is getting the best cinema score. And then the love
Mine's
afterwards.
That's my number 5.
Okay, cool.
They told me there was one thing to look out for this. I'm sitting second row, 10 seconds in, I go, got it.
I'd still argue it's good. This is a really interesting
film. I liked it a lot.
From Steven Soderbergh, who is taking an interesting approach to the idea of like a haunted house style movie.
Uh-huh.
There's been a lot of films this festival that have looked at the horror genre or horror subgenres and been like, what if we change the perspective?
What if
How does that change the movie?
Crazy house?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What if from the perspective of Nick Frost's mustache? This film, particularly Presence, is really giving you like a very kind of creepy sort of haunted perspective on the story of like a presence being occupying a house. It's about a family that moves into a new house and there's a spirit that's sort of sitting there watching them. And I think Soderbergh, because he is such a craftsperson, is able to craft this very unique style for the film. It's very deliberate. And it's like a style that is impossible to not notice, right? Especially if you're too close to the screen where you might get a little bit motion sick from it. But I think it really does an excellent job of sort of flipping the whole genre on its head, just sort of really changing the way into telling a story like this, that it is through these kind of fleeting memories. It's through these like glimpses of moments rather than like scenes that kind of play out to the full extent of what you want to see. I thought it was just extremely bold and really kind of does a great job of giving you an unsettled, creepy feeling. It may not be like a boo jump scare type of horror movie, but in terms of exploring these types of stories, it's one of my favorite sort of ghost stories I've seen in quite a while.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. It was funny. I think we were talking about energies even before watching this movie, just energies in houses and stuff like that. And it really kind of is just playing on that idea of like an energy can inhabit a space, but then also that time doesn't necessarily have to be linear, which I think there's another movie that dealt with that too, that just time is kind of going on in like this weird little thing. So it's really dealing with that. And I just thought it was so entertaining. I will say one of the characters does feel a little cringe, if I can just put it. Just
I didn't mind really so though. Yeah,
he's supposed to be, but there's also like I feel like there's too far. I feel like there's a level that's almost too far that maybe like other characters would notice how cringe it is in the moment. I don't know, but it's fair. But it's more that like for what that character's done, you can't be that cringe. You could only get away with it one time and be that cringe. I don't think you could get away with it multiple times. Maybe either way, that was my only thing. I don't even mind. I will say the time he was the most cringe, I kind of lost track of what he was saying because they were playing a really good song. But I knew what was coming. Like once you figure out what's coming and there's like a line someone says earlier, and then when someone else says something else, and you put those two things together, I was just like waiting for it to play out the way I expected, and it did. And sometimes that's not satisfying, but to me, it was like I feel like I've been rewarded for paying attention to something a character said.
Yeah, I don't think it made it obvious. It was there to connect the dots if you are looking for it. But I think the way the film resolves itself is actually really, really satisfying.
I liked it a lot
in a way that I don't know if all these like films of this style are typically satisfying.
Yeah,
kind of.
It's hard for
close the book
landing.
In a really nice way.
They did, yeah.
Written by David Koepp, who did a lot of really great scripts: Jurassic Park, Spider-Man, Mission Impossible. Good screenwriter.
Look, to be fair, with Jurassic Park, he had the blueprint.
Yeah, well, you still got a
no. It's true. It's good. It's good.
Secret Window.
Kimmy, more
Kimmy
Soderbergh.
There you go.
Yeah. All right, so Presence. I got that at number seven on my list of best 10 films from Sundance. Amanda, what's your number seven?
It's my number seven. I think I'm going to go with Dee Dee.
Hell yeah.
I'm going to go with Dee Dee. We caught this one yesterday, finally. It was one of the ones I was really looking forward to coming into the festival because I love a good coming-of-age story. And it immediately starts, and I see a Paramore poster on the wall, and I was like, oh, it's for me. Mm-hmm. And then it just kept going. I knew every single song. We saw some MySpace Top 8. We saw some AOL. Just all of the vibes felt so authentic, even though I am the same age as the older sister, not him. Doesn't matter. The vibes were there.
Hey, we were there in 2008. We remember
2008. It was good. It was. It felt very good. So it was one of those ones. I'm like, I'm gonna vibe with this, even if it sucks. But then, thankfully, the movie itself was actually quite good. Yeah. Very satisfying. It's another really good one that's just kind of looking at identity and appreciating family. Very similar to the My Old Ass vibe of people learning, like. Yeah, things can be tough, but it's good. You have to kind of realize other people's perspectives and situations too and be more open to that and just the way we change and how we gain and lose friends, try to find your place in the world. And then I think one of my favorite things is that I feel like in so many of these movies, when the kids meet the older kids, the older kids are always the really bad influences. Mm-hmm. In this one, the older kids were like, nah, I don't smoke weed. Mm-hmm. I don't do that. Be nice to your mom. Like, and I like that. I like that vibe where it's almost like you feel like you have to overcompensate for how young you are in a way that isn't actually necessary. And yeah, so I just thought it was really nice.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a great coming of age film, and I think it does a good job of, as you mentioned, it's not like the external influences are turning him bad or something. It's like you just have to grow up.
You have to grow up. And we all do it. We all have to do it, you know?
Yeah. And I don't know. I think it really handles the ways that growing up is scary but exciting but also really hard to figure out in a really really well in a really well executed package, because it's like he's just this really sweet kid who is trying his best but it doesn't have a pathway for him, and he's carrying his own sort of embarrassment over who he is and how he exists. But I don't know. I think it's just really, really beautifully told. It's also, as you mentioned, one of those movies that is so so firmly placed in a time that, like, I just get these very visceral flashbacks to it. Like, things like the chatting with the smarter child aimbot.
Yes, the smarter child
aimbot.
That just,
like, unlocks a portion of your brain that you forgot about.
And being goofy in front of webcams because we had just first got them, and none of this, like, being sexy never would have ever occurred to us at the time because, like, why? What is that?
Mm-hmm.
It was just really nice. It just felt authentic, which is a thing that can be thrown around easy. And it didn't feel like they were just throwing in references for the sake of having a bunch of references thrown in. It felt authentic to the time period of, like, these are the things I remember loving when I was 13 in 2008 or like 14, and then putting that in the movie.
Yeah. The director spoke afterwards in the Q&A about how, you know, he was trying to capture what life was sort of like. And we spent a lot of time in that era just, like, sitting on the computer.
Yeah.
You know, the screen life technology didn't really reflect that era back then. But now we can. And it really, like, the feeling of, like, sitting on your computer and receiving DMs and that sort of, like, altering your social situations. Like, it just, I think it captures that really well.
Like, Searching, just a couple years ago, was the next category. Mm-hmm. Now this is, like, a whole ass Searching movie.
Yeah, but
and it's just regular. It's been normalized since
but
then.
But this is such a time period that's hard to, I think it would be really good to see something because this was when you first realized and maybe didn't realize that somebody could ruin your life by knowing your password. Mm-hmm. You didn't think, oh yeah, sure, you can have my MSN password. What are you going to do? Talk to a bunch of people as if they're you and ruin your life. Yeah. Like, it's, you know.
So shout out writer-director Sean Wang, who we've shouted out before because they made the 99 Wipeout short that's now Oscar-nominated.
Rooting for. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, but
get an Oscar nomination, premiere your movie at Sundance.
He's like, decent. I'm 29.
Decent.
But this is also the story that we try to talk about a lot when we talk about those shorts, right? Because sometimes those shorts are introducing you to the next mm-hmm. filmmakers you're going to like. And it just so happens with Sean that it's happening like immediately.
Yeah.
So hopefully people get a chance to check out Didi. You had a number 7. I put it all the way at number 4 nice. On my list. I liked it quite a bit. We might hear about it again.
Oh, yeah.
But let's circle back to Art's number 6. I think we're
six.
At.
6, yeah. I got my spotlights in here. 2 movies that y'all saw at multiple festivals prior to me.
Oh, gotcha.
Finally got the chance to see them. In Hitman and How to Have Sex. The 2 H's over here. Hitman, H's. We have a whole video very for, different. And I think would definitely be the one that solidified right here at number 6 because this was everything that people have been raving about and some. Richard Linklater knows how to blend genres mm-hmm. like a master. And he's got a dude who he's been working with for a while, I think firing on all cylinders as this pretend assassin, a pretend hitman who's trying to stop other hitmans, who then maybe becomes a hitman.
Yeah, Glenn Powell, you're talking about.
Glenn Powell is incredible in this movie. He has the charisma that people have been seeking out for a movie star that they claim no longer exists. What was his lead as well? I'm blanking over here.
Ajay Arjuna?
Yeah, Adria. I don't
Adria,
know.
Adria.
Fantastic. Yeah, they have the scene in this movie.
They do.
It got picked up by Netflix, but if you can see this in a theater, do so because it is incredible. Whereas How to Have Sex is picked up by Mubi, and you may need to watch that at home.
You might. It's
because
probably,
that, was as y'all told me when y'all saw it from your respective festivals, that is a tough watch through and through, but it has some of the best young performances of the year as these girls travel abroad and end up in a scenario where they start questioning everything that happened as it's happening as well. So both movies that I would have here as my spotlight category.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, I thought How to Have Sex was pretty fantastic when I saw it back at TIFF.
It's subtle. Like
it's very subtle to the point that, like I said, if you remember from the con video, we had a grown man arguing with 5 women on a bus ride back.
That should have been
to
the
center area.
The flag in the field already.
Yeah, literally. How and without spoiling the comment, how would she have fallen asleep that fast came up, and it was literally just 5 people being like, "Why would that matter? What's the difference between being asleep and pretending to be asleep?" You know, like. Yeah. Heated.
But I think the thing that is really commendable about it is the way that it just sort of feels so unadorned, not dramatic. It's just kind of like stripped from life and yeah. A lot of things are underplayed in that movie in a way
yeah,
that
just exactly.
makes it feel that much more real, makes you feel that much more mm-hmm. effective yeah. too. So shout out to director Molly Manning-Walker. And also you were shouting out Mia McKenna-Bruce.
She was fantastic.
Kind of is like mini Florence Pugh in that movie or something. She's so
incredible.
Right?
No,
yeah.
She's really good.
She's
in
so
it.
Good.
I thought you were going to say that Richard guy as the other director. He's coming up. But no, yeah, she was good.
All right, so a duo of films that premiered elsewhere at Arts number 6 with Hitman and How to Have Sex. I think I talked about my number 6 already, which was A Different Man. So let's go back to Amanda for her number 6.
I'm going to go with Thelma.
Okay.
Oh. I had such a good time with Thelma. This is it's like a movie. This poor grandmother falls for the, you know, your grandson's been in a horrible accident, needs X amount of money to get out of jail because of what they caused. So now you're both worrying for their well-being and the fact that they're in jail. And it's fake. And then, you know, you find out it's fake pretty fast. But by then, she's already made her way down to the post office with $10,000. And this becomes her journey of getting that $10,000 back because she is sick of people treating her like she is ready to be put out to pasture and wants to be useful for a variety of reasons. And it's really nice. And you kind of get a nice character arc through her and Fred Heckinger's mm-hmm. character, who is mm-hmm. the grandson, because he's kind of has to... almost on the opposite end of the spectrum where his parents are kind of treating him like he's also someone who can't function and handle themselves and him having to learn that, you know, he can take that step out. They baby them both. It's like the horseshoe theory is that when you're really old and really young, you're kind of like more close together than when you're in the middle. And like, they're taking that to the extreme when he should be well outside that horseshoe ratio. But yeah, I thought it was really fun, really delightful. June. So good.
Yeah.
So fantastic.
She learned nothing from Nebraska.
And I really liked in the Q&A, the director said, you know, watching Tom Cruise jump off a plane feels exactly like trying to watch my grandmother get on a bed. You know, it feels like just as extreme a stunt. And I love that. And
because she did her own stunt.
She did her own stunt. So she's like rolling off couches stuff. It's cool.
I know it's
fun.
Like a little corny, but I thought it was adorable.
I liked it.
It's basically like a parody of a Liam Neeson action movie.
It is, yeah.
You know, because it's the sort of revenge story that we've seen so many older actors do. Just this time it's a much older actor.
Yeah.
So they accommodate that by making it a little bit like cute and
yeah,
the lips, the
they treat like rolling over on the bed like it's her jumping out of the plane, mm-hmm. right? And it's given that dramatic, you feel it, you're like
oh my god, grandma, you're gonna break your hip,
that ending sequence when she's ready to go out. I thought it was raw. It's cute the whole movie, and then she means business. Plus her first leading role, which I still like, I don't get that. She's 90 something years old and this is her first leading and mm-hmm. executive produced role.
Yeah.
So shout out this guy for having a good relationship with his grandma.
Yeah. So her real 104 year old grandma.
Dang. Huh? That's wild.
Yeah.
100 what?
104.
104?
I heard Tyson said 40, bro. 104 still. It's crazy. Damn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Did her own stunts.
Thelma makes it to number 6 on Amanda's list. Art, can you slide over just a tiny bit because you're a little bit further out of shot? All right. Let's go now to Art for his number 5.
We're in the top half. Yeah. All right. I know this is going to come out in somebody's top as well. So we'll see who has It's What's Inside.
I definitely know, for sure.
But that is mine at number 5, a movie that we're going to be talking about more.
All right, cool. So It's What's Inside makes Art's list at number 5.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
My number 5 is Will and Harper. I also think that's going to be a bit higher.
No, it's not. No? Honorable. I told you I got one doc that made it.
Wow, okay. So
yeah. Wow, I'm surprised.
That you liked it that much.
Why wouldn't I like it? I love Will Ferrell.
Top 5?
Yeah.
I just didn't think you'd be that enthusiastic. You were sick when you guys came out of it.
Yeah, I was really sick.
Yeah, it was the sickest you've been.
Yeah.
No, I mean, Will Ferrell and Harper Steele.
It's in my top docs. Don't get it twisted.
Yeah.
Don't get it twisted.
Will Ferrell and Harper Steele are long friends. They worked on SNL together. They worked on a bunch of movies together.
Classic bits.
Harper has more recently transitioned.
Mm-hmm.
And Harper, prior to transition, loved to go on these road trips throughout the U.S., stopping in random bars and stuff.
We didn't get the Keystone, the Natty Light.
Yeah, we did get the Scorch and Pringles, though.
No matter what.
You had to get it in 15 packs.
Oh, we did get the Scorch.
We got the Scorch.
The idea was that they have not changed at all. They still like this crappy beer. Yeah.
Trying to do the things that they used to love. And yeah, so this was a chance for Harper to try and go on this road trip that brings her so much joy. But with Will Ferrell there is kind of like a safety buffer or like a comfort blanket or anything
for
like
him
that.
Him to also understand, which to me, this is a friendship movie through and through.
That's the thing. Ultimately, what it is like it's a chance to hang out with these two friends who have been through so much together, who have this deep love of each other, are extremely funny and particularly funny opposite each other because they have this great comedic back and forth.
Yeah,
and it's just a really great chance to be in this friendship and experience what it's like to kind of like redefine but also strengthen those types of bonds.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really fascinating. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be like a huge tool for trans people, but I do hope it will be a tool for cis people who maybe don't understand that situation.
Yeah, and I think that's more, sorry not to cut you, sorry, I do think that's kind of more important right now.
Yeah,
and that is a tool for trans people, no?
I would say that it's more,
it's the benefit.
I haven't seen it, but just based on what I've heard, it just seems that it's more that it's, if you're a trans person, you've gone through this, you know these emotions. This is more to let...
You're not learning anything new from
you're not learning
the
anything.
People who you will interact with.
Yeah.
Here you go, study.
Yes, that's what I mean.
You're
so
my teammate on this earth.
Yeah, like, but I just mean it's not going to be a tool for a trans person to realize something about themselves.
It's still beneficial.
It's beneficial. We're not saying it's not beneficial.
For the Will Ferrell fans out there? Oh my
and
word.
And that's the thing, and I think
that's the profound part.
Hopefully Will Ferrell is the kind of person who kind of like cross boundaries and political leanings and stuff like that and can maybe help get that that kind of message.
Even for
across.
The haters out there who may not enjoy Will Ferrell as much as others out there, I think even they.
I don't know who would say that.
I don't know.
I don't know who would say that.
Will Ferrell.
Yeah, but he's so like. I don't
goofy
know.
That you can't take him serious. Like, you just feel that there's good energy in the room.
Yeah, I think he does a really good job of, like, both making things more comfortable and fun, but also reading the moment. And it's not just, like, him constantly goofing off. It's also he's able to have these real conversations.
And when he can't de-escalate something, that's where you go, wait. It's making Will Ferrell uncomfortable?
Yeah.
And that's, like, I think a really big part of the documentary as well.
Yeah. You know, it's also just this... opportunity to showcase some other funny people, and they have all these very funny friends who they meet along the trip or call up and stuff like that. And look, if you just are a fan of comedy films that have come out for the past 20 years, there's probably going to be a few people who show up that you love.
The way they do montages is so sick. Yeah. They'll be like, oh, and by the way, this was our time in SNL, and they won't even like, they'll just hit a cowbell, and I'm like, oh, you're not. Any other documentary would have been like, do you remember how big this sketch was?
Yeah.
They just ring the cowbell and they move on to the next thing, and I'm good. Like, bruh, y'all have so much history together, it's not even funny. But let's be serious. I understand this could be a tool. I understand it could be a lot of things. But this might win Best Original Song at the Oscars.
It's got the best song we heard at Sundance.
Because some people were crying throughout the movie. But what got me was the outro song during the credits. People were leaving. I'm like, no,
this song.
We were promised something. And that song hits.
Nice.
It's
really good.
Keep talking about it. I figured out who co-wrote the song with her. Do you know this?
Oh,
please tell me you know it.
I don't actually, off the top of my head.
I'll try to figure it out, but
yeah,
that was funny. I have it in my notes, I think.
There you go. We'll just cut this part down.
It is the son of somebody big, is all I know, who wrote it with this comedian. The son of, like, a really major person. I'm like, you write? No, please, no. I think it's another actor.
I have no idea who he's going to say.
I have no idea who he's going to say.
Who wrote the song from
Hunter Biden.
Hunter Biden.
It's the son of one Batman. Sean Douglas is his name. It's Michael Keaton's son. I had no idea.
Michael Keaton has a kid?
Michael Keaton has a child who has made like top 40 hits.
What?
And yeah, he writes a song with the comedian in this movie. It's literally like the last thing that plays in the film. It's the best part of it.
What's one of his top 40 hits?
I don't... Hold on.
You gotta come with the receipts, man.
I mean, I knew Michael Keaton was like a funny guy, but I didn't know he's given
birth to like some really big people. This man's got TED Talks. This man's a multi-platinum songwriter.
Wow.
I see right here he did Call of Duty Black Ops 3. So right off the bat, hey.
That's my favorite song.
He's stuff for Thomas Rhett, Plug-in Stereo. I guess a lot of country. He's writing for himself as well, but I see an Oscar nomination in his future for this little jingle, personally.
I hope so. It's really delightful. I'd love to see them perform it at the Oscars.
Oh, he's done Akon?
Demi Lovato.
Selena Gomez.
Demi.
Like,
David Guetta.
He's been out there. Normani, who's also in the festival as well. None of those have been as good as the one that he has for this movie.
All right, so Will and Harper, I had it at my number 5. Art, you had it in your honorable mentions?
Yep.
And
Top Doc for sure.
And Amanda hates Will Ferrell. So Amanda, what's your number 5 favorite film out of Sundance?
I had Presents, so we already talked about
cool.
it. We already talked about it.
Yeah, we did. Steven Soderbergh.
Yeah,
win.
We like it.
So let's go back to Arturo for his number 4.
My number 4 is Exhibiting Forgiveness. One of the longer dramas in the U.S. competition, but one that comes from a director who I thought did a fascinating short film in Shut Up and Paint, I want to say, where he was discussing the idea of art, which he is himself an artist. He even uses his paintings in the movie, which I really appreciate because many times it's like, oh, this great artist, and they won't show you the painting because they know people at home might think it sucks.
Yep.
The balls to go all in and show you this work that he's done for his own movie.
And even more than that, one of the things that's really a pleasure in movies like about a songwriter, for example, is where they show you a bit of the song and then you see the song progress and it's like, oh, you see it to come together and it feels that much better.
Yeah.
They do a little bit of that with the paintings in this movie too.
Oh, they take you all the way back to like where that memory came from, what instigated it, what was he feeling at that point in time. There's this one with a lawnmower.
Ooh.
I mean, it's just deep stuff. The acting performances just all around. I think it's one of the best ensembles. You've got Andre Holland, you got Andre Day, you have John Earl Jelks as his father. Anjanou Ellis is one of my favorite performances, not of just last year, but even coming out of this fest playing his mother. Right at the beginning, he had said that this was not a movie about trauma as much as it was a movie about healing. We have a lot of movies where it's like recognizing the trauma and then wallowing with it or giving you an out where anybody watching the movie is like, okay, glad I helped for them, but not for me. This is like a step-by-step of seeing where the cracks are and how to fix that foundation, showing that it was also his father who had his own turmoil that came back to bite him. We had mentioned a documentary that came out of South By that I had put in my top, Great Photo, Lovely Life. this is great painting Lovely Life to that degree where everyone thinks like, oh, he had a good upbringing because he's here. What could he have come from? And I think seeing this artist, as it comes from a director who's also an artist, who's made a short about how he feels his art is being sold to rich people and his own family will never be able to see it. This is just, once again, him realizing that movies are the most accessible way of putting your art. That one painting, you can get 24 frames per second and showcasing what he thinks is really important out there. You know what this reminded me a lot of? To wrap up, do you remember the movie from last year of the guy who goes back to Detroit after being in Hollywood?
Oh, shoot.
Yes.
Was it To Live and Die in L.A.?
Yes, To Live and Die. Yeah. And To Live and Die and Live.
There you go.
To Live and Die and Live, yeah.
Another very similar thing of realizing that you've made it, and it's like, but I'm still dealing with so much other stuff back home to be selling this, how many six-figure, seven-figure painting. A profound, very beautiful film. I hope people get the chance to watch it.
This is one I definitely want to revisit. I was kind of working while we were watching it, so I could...
It was also longer than the day. This is the second half, too.
Yeah.
Where we were... 35, 40 films in?
Yeah, sometimes we're like really trying to pack in films and the quieter dramas, I think, lose out in terms of our ability to properly focus on them. But this is a really beautifully told film and fantastically acted. Andre Holland in particular, you mentioned, but he's such a phenomenal actor.
He's underrated, to be honest.
Yeah, very. I mean, it's because he takes a lot of understated movies like this one. You know, he hasn't had like that huge, huge splashy role, but he's so good whenever he gets a chance. So, yeah, great pick.
Produced by Derek Cianfrance.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be doing trivia later with these two here. They don't even know about it, but that may be something on the pop quiz there. But one of the better producing that we've been seeing here in terms of being able to get a budget and the project ready for a filmmaker to go all out. Again, at 122 minutes, told a story through and through. Shout out Titus Kaphar.
All right, number four for Arturo is Exhibiting Forgiveness. I already mentioned that my number four is Dee Dee, which Amanda picked earlier, number seven, I think. So let's go back to Amanda for her number four.
My number four is definitely higher on your list. It's A Real Pain.
Yeah, I think we're both going to talk about that later.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we can get into the top threes now, or do you want to do our honorable mentions?
No, let's do the top three right now because you just had it at number four. It was a little bit later for hers, but Dee Dee was a standout of the festival. We should have seen it in a theater.
We should have. I wanted to.
Oh, it's just you have to pick and choose Dee Dee as well as like Pony Boy and several other movies were on the same premiere blocks as other bigger stuff that we were able to score tickets for.
That you weren't going to be able to watch at home?
You just have to make these decisions, but damn, a good movie's a good movie no matter where you watch it. Dee Dee is excellent. I actually had Exhibiting Forgiveness above. And then I'm just like quoting things about Dee Dee that is just going to live on forever.
Yeah.
This is a movie that we were talking earlier that the way that it's edited really puts you into the time period. It came from the editors of Missing. I think they were the same Sundance class as The Searching People. So it's like...
That makes sense.
The energy, the DNA, it's all in there. The performance from the lead, Isaac Wong, who was in Good Boys.
Yeah.
Fantastic in that movie. My man had a growth spurt.
Yeah.
And he kills
very different
it.
Performance.
Yeah.
Oh, he's so good in this. His mom's really good in this. And it's just all
Yeah, that like
all
the
around.
Shot on her face at the end.
For sure. If you can't like mid-90s, I present to you the alternative option. And it may
Mid-2000s?
Even be better.
Yeah, I think it's better than mid-90s.
I think it's better than mid-90s.
Yeah. But it's got the DNA. You got what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, it definitely has the DNA.
No, this one through and through. I'm going to like it more and more every time I watch it. It is my... Top five.
Top three.
Easily. So I don't know if you had something else to say, but I know you were talking about it with Amanda, but this was one I was anticipating a lot, and I'm really happy for this director's future.
Yeah, no, same. I'm just I'm glad we got to catch it because it is one of those films, you know, you watch a lot of films at Sundance, and sometimes you have to sit with them and see what they're about and see what they're trying to do and figure out whether or not you like it. This is one where it just like fresh, straight out of the gate.
Yeah.
Like, this is a contagious movie. You just can't deny it.
I said freaking I haven't cussed since the eighth grade was a hilarious line.
Mm-hmm. Lots of good stuff.
Buttery. Said in a movie was great.
No, that
was
the context of it.
Yeah.
And then just seeing old terms. YouTube.
Yeah, old YouTube.
And a decision that needs to be made with old YouTube as well. And that's what it is. It's not just the look of it, the feel of it, but then a decision needs to happen narratively for the character. And all of us as YouTubers go, that wasn't a possible option back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
It fully fits for this period. Stand out, knocked it out of the park. Dude, don't talk to your mom like that.
It was so
in
good.
Right there.
Yeah, don't talk to your mom like that. I love that.
All right, so Dee Dee makes all three of our lists, but it's Arturo's number three.
Just know, Yoel All would make my top five on MySpace.
Thank you. Thank you. Top eight.
I never had a MySpace.
I can tell.
Yeah. I just thought he said he valued us more than that bottom three. I took that as like he valued us even more.
That's cool. That's, yeah. I mean, it is more like the top four. Like it that's is. Kind of the, yeah, the primo
you,
spot.
The, yeah, you want
whatever
the primo.
I meant. That's exactly what I was going for. Thank you.
My number three is going to be Hard Pivot to Daughters.
Ooh. Okay, so there we go.
Yeah, that to me is the standout documentary of the festival. It is a film that chronicles a daddy-daughter dance at a correctional facility in a prison. And it's just this really remarkable showcase of what these families are going through, right? Because they've been separated and they are not, you know, these young girls in particular are not able to have regular visits with their father. And what the program seeks to do is sort of create a space where they can have this sort of normal interaction, right? Like for 6 hours, it doesn't feel like they're behind bars. It feels like they're like a elementary school dance or something like that. And it's just so beautifully told in the way that it's able to articulate the strain that this has on all these different families and all these young children. I think there's certain elements that they do like are not telling you specifically what the fathers are in jail for or in prison for, which I think just does a really great job of centering the documentary in a space that is more productive for the things it's trying to talk about, right?
Because the title,
It's really, really not about like what these guys did to get to this place. It's that they're in this situation. How can we address these situations and how can we address it so these children are as accommodated as possible, are not as traumatized? And, I don't know. I thought it's a film that has so much empathy. It also like really introduces you into these like really incredible people, like just particularly hearing from the young girls who have lived and experienced so much despite their age because of their circumstances. Mm-hmm. It's really incredible. And it's also a film that rather than just centering on this one interesting moment, it takes the time to really put in the work with its characters and guide you not only into the lead up, but also the off ramp and the results of what this whole program has. And I thought it was just like a very stunning piece of documentary filmmaking. I cried a lot at it. I think a lot of people cried a lot at it, considering that it ended up winning the Festival Favorite Award at Sundance.
And the doc one, too. So that's a big heavy hitter because I think last year we had said it went to Radical. I'm blinking on a couple
Navalny.
Of
Navalny.
Oh, Navalny.
Yeah, it's usually like a big one.
A splashier movie, for sure. Yeah. But this is just one that is really, really effective. And I can't imagine being like not unmoved by the story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I got Daughters at number three on my list. Let's go to Amanda's number three.
Yeah, we're going for another big old shift here. We're going to go I Saw the TV Glow.
Okay.
Number two.
Nice.
Let's talk about it now then.
Yeah. This is just that movie that we haven't been able to stop thinking about. The more I thought about this movie, the less I liked another movie. Love Me. There's just so much to chew on with this that I'm so excited to visit it again. Like it's my number one thing that I like desperately want to see again. Just with how it's just so cool. It is very much kind of this trans experience story without being overtly the trans experience story. I feel like there's a lot of different ways you could apply this to your life if you need it, but it really is just that horror of not living your authentic life and what happens 40 years down the line when you realize you haven't. And like, it's the genuine horror of that. And some of the scenes are so horrific, are so gut-wrenching, are so heartbreaking. But then it has so much style with this television show that they create for it, The Pink Opaque. And how it's like years later, they realize like, I shifted what I thought this show was to fit my life more, and now I'm going back and watching it later, and it's not the same at all. It's
the way that like nostalgia kind of tints your memories, and you're become a different person as you age. So the things that perhaps meant so much to you in your youth are not the same as when you first visited them. I think it's really intelligent about the ways that it handles both media and our relationship to media and the ways that we kind of invest a lot of ourselves and our self-identity into media. It's, as you mentioned, like a visually stunning film. There's a lot of imagery that's like hard to forget about in a great way.
Could have been in the next category.
Yeah, like could have been in the next category.
Fits
where it is. I think, yeah, I mean, it's a really, really hard to shake movie for
it is.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I ultimately left it off of my top 10 partially because I knew the two of you would handle it, but like it's also just undeniably going to be one of the stories of this year's Sundance. When we talk about 2024, 10 years from now, it's going to be the year that I Saw the TV Go premiered. And, you know, it's a movie that I think people are hungry for, but I think the people who are hungriest for it are going to feel satiated by it.
Easily, yeah. If you're a fan of Jane's previous work, you're really going to like this one. It's not going to be like a mainstream hit, but I think more people will like it than those who like
We're All Going to the World Fair. Yeah.
In particular, just because of the way that it looks. This was shot by a cinematographer who did 1001, worked magic in that movie. This has some of the best cinematography easily. It has a shining performance from
Justice Smith.
Yeah. Bridget kills it.
Yep.
They do well also, but Justice has this one scene.
One, that's what I mean. That one scene where it's like you realize the full horror of what's happened and what you're kind of like experiencing is like, what the fuck?
A24 is going to give it a full release. Yep. And having seen this in theaters, you need that for the music in particular.
Yeah, so good.
It just comes in right in time. And I know that for a lot of people, this isn't going to be like a Saturday night movie. Maybe it's a little too much for some people. I think once you see the trailer, you will know that. And as long as you're prepped for that, like someone going in to watch a David Lynch movie going like, what the heck is it? This is in that realm of like, you have characters who are connecting in a psychic plane.
Yep.
This is an artist trying to make a piece of media that's trying to connect to you beyond the narrative of what's going on in the movie, but the visuals and the phrases and the different things that they put in there.
Yeah, the wall, it's the name of the high school.
It's the only one I saw twice in a theater, and I caught on even more things the second time around.
I believe it.
I think people are, not everyone's going to love it, but those who do, it's over for y'all. They're going to be so annoying online.
Yeah,
it's one of those films that in a certain way is all instantly iconic.
Yeah, like we've heard it kind of described as this generation's Donnie Darko or even Videodrome, I think was another one. Like just not that it is a rehash of any of that. It's just the way that it evokes emotions and the way that it's kind of addressing with things, but then like taking it one step further in an area of media that's like really underexplored right now.
It's a big mood. The whole thing is a big mood. And I'd say it's like down low. That cathartic feeling that we got in Down Low without all of the funny. And there's still some funny in there, but it is like the most dreary, just stylistic. Like there is a soda machine that they said they imported for that one scene. So, you know, second time I'm watching it, I'm like, oh, this is a painting. Because you got one character over here besides one certain machine and you shipped this machine. It's also funny knowing what the machine is.
Yeah.
It's just details like that I respect a lot. So I think the people have been anticipating this.
It's going to deliver.
You got one of your favorite movies of the year.
Yeah, it's going to be a movie that inspires a lot of 1-star and 1/2-star Letterboxd reactions.
Absolutely.
But probably just as many, if not more, 5-star.
And that's the important part.
Yeah.
Willing to make a movie like that.
That's what I mean. That's what we've been saying. It's we've been looking for movies that have like a clear, consistent vision.
Take the swing.
This does it, and it actually connects really well.
And especially doing what we do, where we try to watch, you know, several dozen movies within a week here at Sundance. Ultimately, it's the movies that are going to inspire a bit of reaction that stand out. Because, like, it's fine to have, like, a decent 3-star movie. Like, I appreciate those, too. But, like, even if it is something that you don't respond to, it's going to wake up your brain.
You ever think that we're becoming, like, IPA drinkers?
Maybe
you know,
a little bit.
We drank so much that your regular person just wants to know what the good lager is. And we're like, we're so beyond that. We are in...
but I think we still enjoy the good lagers. I think we can still enjoy the good lagers quite a bit.
I still want to go get the
You want the Natty Light. You know, I think we can still enjoy the good lagers.
But we
just
also know enough to respect, like, hey, I'm going to give you this crazy pick over here that's so mainstream. Mm-hmm. But also, like, you have to respect what I Saw the TV Glow is doing. Like, you're saying, they're calling it the Donnie Darko of this year. Like, you're saying, it is representative of 2024 Sundance, the way that those 90s movies were for their respective years. This was the one that was sold out from
every,
the jump.
Every night, man. Every night. I liked it a lot more than World Fair, personally. So if you didn't like World Fair, don't let that scare you off of this.
But still be weary.
Yeah, be wary. Like, but like, it is just, it's a really refreshing movie that at the worst will at least make you think, I think. As long as you're willing to kind of engage with what it's doing and where it is, you're going to get something out of it, whether you love it or not.
Yeah, that's why we travel.
Yeah.
All right, so Amanda's number 3. I Saw the TV Glow, also Art's number 2. I feel like my number 2 is going to be the same as Amanda's.
Maybe. It is. It definitely is.
It's What's Inside.
It's What's Inside.
All right, so let's talk about it a little.
My number 5.
Art's number 5, both of our number 2. We already have a video up on the channel talking about our thoughts on this movie.
Let's go 40 more. The thing about it.
I mean, this is as close as we're getting to like this year's Talk to Me. I personally would at least put it on the same level, if not maybe a little bit higher.
You have it at 2. I'm surprised you have it that high too.
It's another one that I just had a lot of fun thinking about after the fact. And I like these movies. Like, these are the movies that I have a lot of fun with. Some of these I've just been like, what am I most excited to watch again?
Right.
And that's kind of where I'm putting things on the rank. Some of these I'm like, that was good. That was great. I don't want to watch it again. Mm-hmm. Some of these are like, that was good. That was really good. I need to watch it again. Yeah. And that's kind of where this is.
How is this not the one that you could easily give to anybody? Yeah.
Yeah, no, this is
maybe
this
even
is,
more than Didi for certain
maybe
people.
Maybe even more than Didi. Yeah. Like, don't exhibit forgiveness here on the Saturday night on TV Glow.
Yeah.
It's what's inside.
Yeah. This is the one that I saw and was like, I can't wait to like have a Halloween party.
Yep. Yes. Watch this movie. Oh my God.
I can't wait to buy the briefcase.
A really just like
10 years.
This is a roller coaster ride of a film, and it might not be the scariest film, but it does have this existential creepiness.
It's thrilling.
And the most of all, it's thrilling. It's suspenseful. Like, it, to me, it's one of those lean-in movies because, like, you just kind of want to know what they're going to do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It just takes a really interesting premise that we're trying
to talk about it, but, like, role-play. The characters are role-playing, and they're very good at role-playing
as each other. And it does it to, like, the nth degree. It mines it for, like, everything that you would want to mine it for. Visually, it also does a lot of really stunning things. Really, just very cool and unique product.
Did you see the premise? Cryptically.
Cryptically. It's like basically a group of friends
like
that have
a werewolf game of sorts.
Yeah, kind of like a mafia werewolf type game, group of friends that hadn't really seen each other in a while are kind of getting back together before one of them gets married. And then one of the friends that they weren't sure was going to show up shows up with a game.
Yes.
And then we'll follow-up is that game. We'll leave it at that, you know? It's the kind of thing, it's like we heard some people being like, it's not really a horror, but it is. Like, if you look at all of the pieces of the movie,
it's a fun movie.
A horror, but it is fun. It's funny, it's fun, it's exhilarating. But if you address the presence, if you play in with the premise and think about what's happening to the characters, if you try to apply that to yourself, it's like the most horrific thing I could possibly imagine happening. Like, there is a chance you could make the argument that being dead might be better depending on what happens, you know? Yeah. There's probably certain things, certain scenarios that you're like, no, I would like to be dead.
Definitely.
Maybe not. That's dark, but still, like, it's a pretty dark concept.
I know what you're saying. Like to be dead,
but yeah, like, just what they're doing with like a lot of the colors and the way that it'll like pop things up. Yeah.
Some of the best editing,
amazing editing.
Yeah. Actually,
amazing
showcasing
editing.
What it's like to want to be. Have that social media clout
The obsession. The two characters have obsessions with the same person, but for vastly different reasons, is a very interesting dynamic to explore in the confines of this movie.
It's a very smart movie.
Yeah,
it's just going to be a good time. You know, there's a lot of great movies we see here, and they're not always like this much fun. Mm-hmm. This one is so much fun, but also like has so many interesting details to it and ideas, and is executed so well. Greg Jardine, absolutely like
killed it.
An announcement of a feature.
Absolutely,
for sure.
Yeah. So. This is one I would have liked to have seen with the public crowd. Like, we caught it with press, which was still really good. The press was still very engaged. Like, I think they clapped at the end. Press doesn't clap for anything, really.
Except for the great movies.
We'll
get another round with it at South by Southwest before it eventually heads to Netflix. But it's what's inside. My number two. Your number two.
Yeah.
That's number five.
Partner.
So easily one of the best of the fest, but not the very best of the fest. Before we talk about our number ones, we have some honorable mentions.
Yes,
I don't know if you want to go through them first, Arthur.
Yeah, let me start with some docs because I'm pretty sure you guys will have my four honorable mentions. One was already mentioned, so I'll stick with some docs. That Better Angels Tammy doc, we had played it while trying to set up a screen, and we're just listening to the background. I think it's a very in-depth doc. We've only seen two episodes out of the like four or five they're supposed to give, but out of all the media we've seen of Tammy Faye, we keep seeing her up on the screen because she was here in the 90s with drag queen master
RuPaul,
and I think that was for the Eyes of Tammy Faye. Look, I think it's a pretty in-depth doc for the two episodes they've given us. You're following like the sun, and it kind of gives you an in on what was happening to the like religion in America from the 80s, 90s. And now it didn't just affect these mega churches. Those mega churches were connected to politics, were connected to things that were happening in every people's home, especially when they were on everyone's TV. The Devo doc, kind of decent in its editing. I know nothing about Devo other than Whip It.
Yeah.
Turns out I know two more other songs. And also they're a serious band. I did not realize that they were actually coming in with a message. Devo stands for de-evolution. And they thought that people were being too smart for their own good, doing all this evil. And they believed that everyone should just become like, I don't know, nincompoops, and that would help the world. It's a fascinating thing that I did not realize came from a band who, when you know their biggest song from like a Miracle Whip?
Miracle Whip.
It was something like that.
There was a commercial. Yeah, makes sense.
I feel like it was Pringles. I don't know. I remember their music always being in commercials, and then they begin the documentary by going like, yeah, we met in Kent State when everyone got shot. And that was the evolution of the de-evolution. So Devo, Frida,
Taco Bell ad.
They actually made a lot of, I got a bigger one for you. Rugrats theme song creator.
Oh, I did know that.
Someone told me this.
Mark Mothersbaugh is like one of the most interesting musicians out there. He did the score for Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, which is one of my favorite film
he
scores.
He starts talking about all of the Wes Anderson movies. Do you know what else he scored?
What?
Devo.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So Devo's good. On the flip side of another doc that's fantastic, Frida. They edited this to perfection, and it's still too short. But it's almost one of those where it's like, I don't know if you would have gotten 2 hours of this style of editing and you could have gotten more story. I'll sacrifice the story for this beautiful motion portraits of her work as you get to the insights just from her writings, just from her letters, all the leaks that have happened pretty much, like in Napoleon. This comes from the editor who has worked on a lot of the films that RBG, I'm looking at some of the other ones that these two filmmakers have made, but they were producers on this movie. This director finally got to step up, make her own film. Julie Cohen and Betsy West. Those are premier documentarians. Their editor now made this movie and still won the editing award and not the doc award. Mm-hmm. So that would be my top doc there, alongside Will and Harper, Daughters, and then obviously As We Speak that we put on there. I think you guys may have my narratives.
Maybe.
Yeah, Amanda, why don't you go next for your honorable mentions?
Honorable mentions. I'm going to go with Girl State. I did actually have a lot of fun with Girl State.
Yeah.
I think it needed to go harder in certain areas. I think that the filmmakers really wanted to be, I think, more hands off in a certain area that they needed to be. I would have liked to have seen them actually get involved with the differences between Girl and Boy State for the doc area. Then I get Between the Temples, which we did already talk about. So he already mentioned it, Between the Temples, which I did really enjoy. I'm trying to just go for some stuff that we haven't already talked about here. Your Monster was another one that was kind of like dancing with my top 10 just because of how much fun I had with it. I think it's just this like really kind of cute story. I do think it does something smart at the end. For some reason, I feel like I'm seeing people not catching on what actually happened.
I love what happens at the
end. The end is really good. The end really sells it. It's very fun. We saw it with a very engaged crowd at the library, which seemed to be the place to be for those.
The rowdy venue of Sundance.
The rowdy.
I don't know what they put in the stairs up to the library. Yeah.
It's just the lack of oxygen up there.
I legitimately think it's the not the premiere showings. It's the secondary, third, fourth showings that all of the stuffy rich people are gone. The people that were able to just snap up those tickets immediately and maybe not appreciate the movies that they're buying tickets to
and
are
gone. And
the middle
class poor people come in.
And now you get all the people who are here for what it is. They know what the premise is. They're down. They're
people
engaging. They're ready for it.
Yeah.
So like we got booze when she's like kissing someone we don't want her to kiss. We got cheers when like it was exciting.
On the bus ride, people were naming who told them not to come to the movie. Like,
yeah.
There were vendettas out of this.
Yeah,
they had
like,
their
literally,
own monsters.
Literally.
I was like, y'all thinking this is a little too far.
Yeah.
It's cute though.
It's cute. I liked it a lot. Then Kneecap is another one that was kind of dancing with my top 10 as well.
Same with me.
Very fun movie about a real life Irish rap group called Kneecap, who most interestingly actually record a lot of their songs in the original Irish language, or I guess it would be like Gaelic or whatever, but very cool. And then it's kind of have this whole side story about like preserving that Irish language and what kind of freedom comes from preserving an indigenous language.
It's got a little bit of that John Carney movie musical vibe, where it is sort of this like scrappy drama about
these
people who are a little bit down on their luck, but turn to music to kind of build their lives back up. And then it'll sort of, in the process of writing or performing their music, it'll be them breaking out into kind of a music video sequence or something like that. It's got maybe a little bit of a harder edge than some of those movies too, because they are, you know, these like partiers.
And they did get pulled into actual political issues.
Exactly,
like they were actually seen as like this huge controversial issue.
Yeah, exactly.
One of them's like a teacher.
Yeah, one of them's a teacher, yeah.
Yeah, but it's also like dealing with the whole idea of like the occupation of Northern Ireland or the north of Ireland and stuff like that. So I think there's a lot of really cool stuff in it, but it's also the music is fun and
it's
the performances are really good, even though they're using the actual members of Kneecap to act in this film. Mm-hmm. I think they're all really
good.
It's better than when Clint Eastwood did it with the soldiers.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it works a lot better.
It was really good. So I this was one that, based on the description, I wasn't actually interested in because it seemed like it was going to be way more split doc narrative or just weird.
Of the other next ones.
I just feel like the descriptions for movies this year have been doing them a huge disservice, at least for me. So I am glad that I gave this the time because I really loved it. And it's been one of my highlights of the fest. And Kneecap has a new fan. you know?
There we go.
So that's...
We'll bump some songs in the car on the way to the airport.
Yeah, we should, you know? Yeah, I think that's pretty much it for stuff that hasn't already been mentioned. You know, Little Death was kind of cool, just to kind of give a little nod to that one.
It was entertaining.
It was entertaining, but yeah, I think that's pretty much it for stuff that hasn't already been mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, we mostly mentioned most of my honorables, but I'll give a quick shout out to three movies. One is the best doc I saw that didn't make my list, which was Porcelain War.
It's kind of this morning. It is depressing.
Yeah, it's really, it's depressing, but it's also like kind of like a testament to, you know, human spirit and perseverance and stuff like that. It's all these artists in Ukraine who've essentially like put down their paintbrushes and picked up their guns and stuff like that. But it's also the film, you know, you talked about Frida and the way that they do the moving portraits and stuff. They do a lot of that in this film too, where they take their artwork and kind of animate it to bring it to life.
The porcelain animation scene was pretty cool.
They also have the movies packed with all this like Ukrainian music too, which is really riveting and kind of helps set the mood in a way that's not like too downtrodden. It's more like there's a spirit to it. There's a celebration quality to it too. So I really appreciated it. It does like tackle the war, but it also does it in a very human way.
U.S.
Yeah, produced in the U.S. Even though it's,
I thought it was. I keep checking it for the world. It's the U.S. I'm like, which one is it in?
Yeah. It feels, usually we get the Ukrainian films in the world category, right? But
also all the footage being shot by the subjects and like you're saying, them being artists was a very interesting thing because this is showing you a lot of the people who stayed. So like you're saying, they're like literally becoming soldiers just because that's the outfit you got to wear going out, and they'll just be like walking your dog with missiles on the ground. Is an insane shot to showcase in a movie.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's one of those films where you're watching and you're like, please, please don't blow up. Please don't about to show me a dead body.
And again, we've seen so many Ukrainian movies, but, you know, in the rear was them leaving. We have seen other ones where people got attacked. This is like the people who are now living there. Like, this is what it's like to survive here. Some people left, some people are gone. Some people are fighting. We're trying to survive. And that's pretty profound.
Yeah, so Porcelain War, I would want to give a shout out to. Give a quick shout out to Ghostlight.
Thank
the
you.
The very first
Thank
one
you.
We saw here at Sundance.
Yeah, that's another good one.
I think it's just a really sweet movie, one that has these interesting ideas about grief and about processing pain through art and also just like the world of community theater. And I think it's all handled really, really, really well.
Like a
well.
True indie movie.
Yeah.
That's what it really felt like. It was a strong start. Strong start.
It reminded me a lot of the sort of like... low-key dramas in like the early 2000s that would break through whether it's like I don't know stuff like Junebug or stuff like, even something more elevated that's like I don't know, it feels like it could star Steve Carell in an alternate reality. Because it's just got this charming quality to it too, and it actually one of the few films that is like about grief that I think has something unique and interesting to say
that
I've seen recently,
and that meta layer.
The lead actor is acting opposite his actual wife and his actual daughter in the film, playing his actual wife and actual daughter.
And hopefully it's not true, but I mean, they said it really connected to them. So knowing how like dark the storyline is, I could definitely see this as it being a full circle thing about how he learns from art in a movie where the actors are learning from art as well. From Chicago too, so shout out the family.
There you go. And my last honorable mention, I'll give a quick shout to Stress Positions. Theta Hamill, I believe, is their director, writer, editor, and star of this film, alongside John Early, who we like a lot and is incredible in this film as like a guy just sort of spinning out of control in the height of like COVID paranoia and stuff like that. This is a film that's set in 2020, shortly after the breakout of the pandemic, and I think really captures that time and that uncertainty, especially the dynamics between people who have different levels of precaution towards the pandemic. I think it gets across really, really well, but it also just feels very lived in, feels very New York, feels very real to this community. It's a movie that's very dense. There's like voiceover and different characters coming in and out, and it feels chaotic the way that I think a lot of their lives probably feel chaotic within the context of this film. It's one that I want to revisit because there is just so much going on, but it made me laugh a lot. I felt like I'd seen aspects of people that I don't normally see portrayed in films in this one. So yeah, Stress Positions. It's definitely a good one.
With all the terrible things that they say, but how brutally honest they're willing to be about not knowing something. It's very hard to recommend this one, but like we want to rewatch it. Yeah. So it's like, how do I not recommend a movie that we want to waste time rewatching?
Exactly.
There's a lot of really good jokes in this. He is fantastic in his physical performance. It's a difficult one to recommend, but it's there.
Yeah.
And if you're, once there's a trailer out, if you're willing to give it the time, give it the time, because there's some jokes we've been repeating.
Definitely.
Good pick. Amanda, no loving, lying, or bleeding?
We haven't talked about our number one of the festival.
Oh my goodness. I thought it wasn't. I thought you had something else.
No.
We have the same number one, I believe. So let's go to Amanda for her favorite film of Sundance.
It's like, I don't even know if it is my favorite. It's just in my number one spot right now.
You got to listen to your heart. I've been trying to do that a little bit more this year. Like, there's probably, TV Glow is probably one of the 10 best movies I saw here, but it's not the one that hit me in the chest.
That's totally fair.
Listen to your bleeding.
Just, yeah, my love and my lies and my bleeding brought me to lesbian Kristen Stewart, as it often does. But, you know, this was the movie I was most excited coming into the fest to watch. I thought it looked really gritty and interesting. And for the exact reasons you didn't like it are the reasons I did like it. We both, you know, look at it. It's like, this is exactly what I thought it was going to be. And it worked for me a lot. It is this very gritty story of a gym manager meeting a professional bodybuilder. And they kind of go on this journey to try to boost up this bodybuilder's chances at winning a competition. But then there's this entire other backstory kind of swirling on with this gym manager, her family, and how they kind of all get swirled in together. And I thought it was kind of interesting how it was addressed. Like, I think you watch the trailer and you might think it's one thing, or it's just like, oh, you're just getting pulled back into the criminal life. You can't get away from it. But it's really not that. It kind of goes to very extensive levels, and it's ultimately all for love. There are some amazing, not even necessarily love of these two characters, just love of a family, love of people in your family, which I really like. Love of what you do. And I just really like how it plays out. I think Kristen Stewart performance in particular is fantastic. We've been talking about it a bunch. There's some reactions, some comments, some dialogue that are just like so obviously her and authentic. They feel real. It doesn't feel like somebody even tried to script that moment. It's just a genuine reaction. It's so good. And I think it's just little moments like that that make it fun. I was at the premiere. I was in the front row. The whole experience was really good for me. As someone who didn't love Saint Maud, I think that this is a step in a direction that I prefer out of Rose Glass. Very excited to see what comes next. And I just think everybody in this movie was really firing on all cylinders, whether it's Katie O'Brien, Dave Franco, Ed Harris, even Jenna Malone.
Ed Harris was great. Jenna Malone, too.
She's in two
as well.
So really, really strong performances all around. I really just love the gritty kind of late 80s, kind of verging into the 90s vibe that this has around everything. So, yeah, big fan. Just watch out for the context clues. And, you know, not everything has to be taken like fully literally all the time. But, yeah, it was fun. I had fun.
You also were a fan of Love, Lies, Bleeding. We talked about this.
We have a whole video on it. I had that as my honorable. I think it's a solid movie. I think it's going to be. Have a little bit of a splash.
It's going to hit with the people that it's going to hit with, you know?
Perfectly shot. I think it's a good follow-up for her.
Very good, yeah.
Like y'all been saying the whole time, sophomore year for a lot of these directors, so.
Yep, sophomore step up.
Speaking of, the best sophomore jump of them all.
Truly, truly.
Let's talk about my number one, your number one.
The world, the people's
my number
one.
My number four.
Even though I lost.
Yeah, it is the Waldo Screenwriter Award.
Oh!
Waldo Salt.
There you go.
Yeah. Shout out to Waldo Salt.
My homie.
But yeah, the Sundance Award winner for best screenplay, or at least in the U.S. dramatic section, the special jury prize.
And in our hearts.
We're talking about A Real Pain, the second film, written and directed by Jesse Eisenberg. He stars in this unlike his last one. It stars opposite Kieran Culkin as a pair of cousins who, after their grandmother dies, travel to Poland to go visit where she used to live and go on a Holocaust tour. And it ends up being this really profound look at the ways that different people carry trauma and how different people react to their own hurt. And I think it's just something that is immensely relatable, even if you don't necessarily relate distinctly to these two characters or their story. It's a film that is just incredibly empathetic in the way that it portrays all the people contained within its story. I found a lot of it just incredibly profound in the way that it's trying to elicit this empathy, and thoughtful in its approach. It's also very funny, kind of catches you off guard sometimes, but you have two incredibly gifted comedians who have great timing, and their fluidity with each other, just they bring in a whole dynamic that feels like they have been cousins for a whole lifetime.
Yeah.
The way that they just sort of shift easily between where we have to be serious to each other. We have to talk about the, we have to talk about something that's real, or we throw in a joke here and we just sort of cut the tension. It just lived in a way that I think anybody can relate to those types of relationships. For me, it's the best film that I've seen about cousins. We talked about this again at a longer video that's on our channel already. So if you want to hear us talk about For a Real Pain extensively, you can do that. But Art, why do you have it at number one for your films from Sundance 2024?
I think it fires on all cylinders. Looking at what we're about to do with the awards, I mean, it's got the best screenplay. You're talking about great editing, the way that they're able to cut around the jokes. It's all there. It's got some of the best scenes, some of the best quotes. Like, we can all mention a scene or a quote and have a completely different one. Do you consider Kieran? Lead?
I think they're co-leads. I think they take a very similar amount of screen time.
I think we're seeing it through Eisenberg, which makes sense. It's his script. It's his. He's writing himself as himself.
Sometimes when a film has two leads of the same gender, it's like if they weren't, it'd be like, oh well, he's best lead and she's best actress. Yeah. But like they both are, you know, equally important to the narrative. Yeah. I think. Yeah. So.
Okay, that's fair.
But I could definitely see him getting nominated for supporting.
I have them both as leads right now. I was just saying, if we had him as supporting, then we're splitting a piece for each right there. Mm-hmm. You have all these movies that are about pretty much these people's lives, the filmmakers' lives, and they'll make like a documentary, maybe half and half. They won't really know what they're doing. The way he went in on this was beautiful. There are so many of the things that we mentioned in a longer video about how he made this so personal. It's deeper than a documentary at that point. The fact that he has no score, but what he replaces it with makes it even more beautiful. I think this fires on all cylinders on it being important, on it having a beautiful message. I had Exhibiting Forgiveness. This is doing that in a much more lighthearted way.
Then also coming in with the gut punches.
Coming in with a gun punch, showing you that the people who are right can be wrong and the people who are wrong can be right. Yeah. Like, this is covering so many bases to the point that one of my favorite aspects of the movie is how it's telling you to think of the generations that came before you, you know, twice ago, then think of your parents and think about what you're suffering with at that point. And I to me, any praise that I gave the other nine movies in here, I can give to this. That's how profound I think he was with this movie. He's been working for years in the industry, and it is an incredible feat to see someone who truly cares about the craft, you know, because this is the second, but this is his maestro. And I want to see him make way more of these movies where he has something to freaking say than anything else. And that is a real pain to me. I felt every emotion down to that final shot.
Oh, absolutely.
It is my favorite movie of the festival, and I can't wait to talk about it until the end of the year.
Absolutely. If It's What's Inside was this year's Talk to Me as the kind of like viral fun horror hit, this is, I think, this year's Past Lives. And I don't know if it'll... I don't know if it'll...
For many?
Maybe. I don't know if it's going to have the same ride that Past Lives has.
It doesn't have to, but being able to push it a lot better than the people who always give us, Portrait, the slow movie, Past Lives, and then 2 months later they watch and they go,
it was fire.
This from the jump will finally be like, I don't know, every 2 years we can give them the pretentious pick that they think. Yeah. We're back on that rebound year of, I can say this to anybody and they're going to be like, please give me more picks because that was everything that I didn't know I should be looking out for.
I do think some people might have an issue with the ending because I think some people like little nice bows wrapped on things. Well, but it needed this. And this ending, the ending is what makes it gutsy. It's another ending. It's like
those
a Talk
people
to Me.
Are Jesse in this movie.
It's like a La La Land. That it's like the ending where you're like, that is not where I expected it to necessarily end. I thought we were setting up for something different. And then we are left with that look on someone's face.
Yeah.
And I like the commitment. I like the courage to committing to that because either it is true or it's just the truth he feels. I love it.
And that's a huge part of the movie. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Another Sundance hit. That's an incredibly personal drama that I think will resonate beyond the people who feel a personal connection to it. 100%. Yeah. So yeah. Going back through my top 10, I had Between the Temples at number 10, In a Violent Nature at number 9, Sasquatch Sunset at number 8, Presence at number 7, A Different Man at number 6, Will and Harper at number 5, Dee Dee at number 4, Daughters at number 3, It's What's Inside at number 2, and A Real Pain as my number 1 film of 2024 Sundance Film Festival. Amanda, you got your top 10?
I do. So my top 10, in the 10 spot, I went with Freaky Tales. And number 9, I went with Black Box Diaries. Number 7, I went with, that's 8, I went with A Different Man. Number 7, I went with Dee Dee. Number 6, I went with Thelma. Number 5, I went with Presence. Number 4, I went with A Real Pain, which is not a comment on the quality. It's just that so many
it's
of my
top five.
All my top 5 could really bounce around, you know, my top four especially. Number three is I Saw the TV Glow. My number two is It's What's Inside. And my number one is Love Lies Bleeding.
Excellent list. Arturo, why don't you take us home?
And number 10, I'm starting with Sasquatch Sunset. Number 9, my favorite documentary so far at the festival, As We Speak, dealing with rap music. My Old Ass, if you've ever wanted to talk to an older Aubrey Plaza, you got a movie here.
Always.
A Different Man, I think, is going to be a big hit for A24, and I think is one of their best scripts that they've written in a while. Number 6, I got the duo of Spotlight movies that played everywhere else and finally got to me in Hitman, one of the best movies that's going to be coming to Netflix, and How to Have Sex, one of the most uncomfortable movies coming to Mubi. But then my top 5, It's What's Inside. Like, these guys, it's a standout hit. You'll be able to recommend it to everybody and your grandmother once this comes out. Also,
maybe not your grandmother.
Netflix. My grandma would kill that. She would love this. 4, Exhibiting Forgiveness, which I'm not sure if it got picked up, but yeah, this is a movie that really gets into the idea of generational trauma and how to exhibit that in your art. Dee Dee, one of the best throwbacks. This is exactly what we need when we're talking about nostalgia, using that as the period piece for a child who's growing up in that era, and it knocks it out of the park. I'm so glad it delivered. I hope he wins an Oscar in a couple of months, but Dee Dee is a standout comedy drama in my number 3 spot. And number 2, I Saw the TV Glow. For those who hate it, in a couple of years, give it another chance. I think it's going to resonate with a lot of people. This is that movie that feels more than a movie. It feels like a statement. And this is A24's biggest hit so far this year. And they've got, what, the most expensive movie with Civil War coming out? People have been saying 2025 is the year. 2024 is going to be crazy. And it's because of the picks that we have here, including my number one, A Real Pain. One of the standout ones that got picked up by Searchlight
Pictures, yes.
Which we think means
it should get a run later this year, hopefully.
However you see it, because it's going to be one of the must-watch picks of this year.
All right, so those are some of the best movies to play at the 2024 Sundance Film Festival. We are wrapping up our coverage.
Retired.
Got to figure out some food options. Got to go see Freaky Tales.
Watch another movie.
Yeah, y'all got another movie.
By the time you see this, we'll all have left Utah anyway. So.
Yeah. Oh, I was almost dicey for me.
Yeah, hopefully we'll all have left Utah.
We'll have left Utah.
I'm going to hide in the back of your trunk. We're going to go see Argyle. It's going to be great.
I'm pumped. I'm ready. Any final thoughts on this year's festival before we do our other recordings?
Shout out to all the inner cuties, all the Jedi. I don't know what you call them, Jedi?
Padawans.
Well, Padawans. Yeah. All the Padawans who are out there using lightsabers.
Mostly okayers, you know?
Out there. Be it virtually, be it here at the fest. It's always the best part, talking movies with everybody. I mean, we have our group, and yeah, it's been cool seeing other people's groups build, be it at home. This year, they actually pushed having your watch parties at home, which I thought was cool. So, hey, I hope they continue the virtual. I hope they continue with the really good selections, and unlike what Zach was saying, I hope these festivals don't die anytime soon.
Yeah, no, it's...
I have had a very pessimistic Sundance.
You were just watching how, like, we get less things every year, like, in the bag. It's like, what's in the bag?
Man starts watching more horrors, and all of a sudden, it's the so last Sundance.
He's getting down.
I don't know. I've just been, like, spouting doom and gloom for most of the past week, but it's still fun to be here.
It's very fun to be here.
I just want it to continue.
Yeah, no, and it's been really fun. Like, my first screening, that Ghostlight screening, in the wait list line, someone said they were only here because of my videos, and that's a really cool thing, and just, like,
you hear that Sundance?
Yeah, you hear that Sundance?
Sundance is sitting in a room going, damn it.
We got to let him back in.
Multiple people have come up to me saying that, and other people being like, I've only bought tickets because, like, I've watched your guys' coverage or I watched your videos. And
text
just
Bobby.
Like,
let him know.
Yeah, and it's...
Mr. Redford.
I should, but yeah, no, it's just really nice, even just, like, from a personal level, to know that, like, you can have that kind of effect on someone. Yeah. It's always nice to meet you guys.
Wow, to have started
in
Working Pass. The worst possible thing to be.
This year would have sucked with the Working Pass.
Years, us paying out of pocket as well. Like,
we still pay a lot. Like, I still bought a lot of tickets this year. I bought 3 Love Lies Bleeding tickets trying to get that premiere.
That's another.
Trying to get down to that premiere, I bought 3.
Man, she got tickets for March 3rd. When does it come out?
I was proud of myself. I didn't buy a single ticket this year, and I still got to see everything I wanted to see. Not one.
Nice. I didn't need to, but. Yeah. But it happened.
Yeah. So thanks for Sundance for letting us in. but yeah, I think that's most of what we want to talk about in this top 10 video. So you can catch more from me at Zshevich on different social media platforms or at Multiplex Show for videos on YouTube and TikTok. There you go. I forgot.
What's the platform?
Arturo, what about you?
You can find me in my new Acura mobile driving back home.
Shout out to Acura.
Thanks, Sundance. You can find me at LME Movies on all social media, Letterboxd, Twitter, Facebook, all that good stuff, on YouTube or every week here on the Intrica Podcast.
And Amanda?
You can find me all over the place at Amanda the Jedi.
And for more Intercut coverage, you can follow us across social media platforms at Intercut Pod. You can look up the audio feed on whatever podcatcher you like. I use Overcast. And you can also subscribe to us on YouTube at youtube.com/intercutpod, where we are streaming most Mondays and updating throughout the week and giving you Sundance Top 10, Sundance Awards, Sundance Reviews, and before long, all the same stuff for South By. So stay tuned to the Intercut Podcast channel. And I guess until next time, open the Eccles. Open it up.
The Eccles.
What are we doing?
What are we doing here?
And the Mark and the Yarrow and the Park.
Yeah, where's the Mark and the Yarrow?
That's the thing. We need the Mark. Yeah, what about the Yarrow? We didn't even talk about the Yarrow.